This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake. Imagine discovering a galaxy that seems to be missing most of its mass. No dark matter, no explanation, just a cosmic mystery. This morning, we're joined by Dr. Louisa Buzo of Yale University, whose new Scientific American article explores these strange ultra-diffuse galaxies that are rewriting the rules of how the universe works.
From surprising observations to fierce scientific debate and a bold new idea known as the bullet dwarf scenario, Dr. Buzo takes us inside a discovery that could fundamentally change our understanding of dark matter and galaxy formation. By studying the smallest, faintest galaxy, Louisa is helping test and potentially rewrite our understanding of how the universe is built. Dr. Buzo, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Well, I have to say, I think we need to start off with the basics here. For listeners who've never thought about dark matter, how would you describe what it is and why astronomers thought every galaxy had to have it?
Yeah, so basically, when we look at galaxies, we think they are comprised of basically stars, gas, a little bit of dust, and dark matter. And dark matter is this matter that is there. We know it's there because it interacts gravitationally with everything, but we just cannot see it. And this is measurable by a lot of different manners. And I think the easiest way to explain it is by the velocities of the stars. So stars move very fast if there is a lot of mass, if there is a lot of gravitation. And for most galaxies, their velocities cannot be explained by stars alone. You need something else there that we just cannot see. And this is what we call dark matter.
Dark matter. I mean, we can't see it. We think it's there. But then you had a really weird discovery. And I'm going to get a little technical here on our podcast. We try to keep Cool Science Radio pretty, I would say, educational, but interesting. So I'm going to get a little deep here. So NGC 1052-DF2.
It's a mouthful. Yeah,
it's a mouthful. This one broke the rules. What made it so strange, and why did the astronomy community have such a hard time accepting it at first?
Yeah, so basically, we think all galaxies, they need dark matter to exist. First, to be formed, we need what we call a potential well, which is gravity basically pulls things to form stars. So you need a lot of mass to be able to form stars, to be able to form planets and so on and so forth. So for example, you have the sun and we keep orbiting it because it has this immense mass. So it keeps us there. We think dark matter is kind of like that. So a lot of mass that is pulling the visible matter towards it to form stars, to form planets. But these galaxies, they don't seem to have any dark matter. So first of all, we don't know how to form galaxies in this scenario where you don't have this potential well, this mass pulling things together. And another thing is that you need dark matter to kind of protect the galaxies from being ripped apart. So you need this incredibly massive thing around the visible matter for things not to fly apart, for stars not to go away. And that's why it's so interesting, because these galaxies seem to both have formed and evolved without dark matter. But the astronomical community has a hard time because it's basically everything that we believe. And we know that dark matter is in most of the galaxies. So it does exist, just particularly on these galaxies, doesn't seem to be there.
So, Dr. Buzo, this is really interesting because there's been no controversy about our need for gravity. And really, the dark matter and its gravitational pull is what we're talking about, keeping these galaxies together. So how was it discovered that there's no... It's funny, like, you know that dark matter's there because of gravity, correct? But you can't really see it. So if there is no gravity and no apparent dark matter, what is there and how do you know it's there?
Yeah, so basically what we do to measure in all galaxies, the dark matter content or the total mass of the galaxy is to measure the velocities of the stars within a galaxy. And so if they are very fast, it means that there is a lot of mass, a lot of gravity acting on them. And if they are slower, then it's less massive. And so these galaxies, what we measured is that their velocities are completely consistent with having, with being explained just by stars providing this gravity, just by visible matter providing this gravity, no extra need for any dark matter there. They have very slow velocities, basically.
I guess the question would be, is how rapidly are those galaxies changing then? If there's not, if they're very slow with velocity and yet there's nothing really to hold them together, were, did you observe them changing a lot over periods of time?
No, and I think that's actually one of the most interesting things, is that somehow they are able to keep stable for millions or billions of years. So these galaxies, we measured their ages, and they have about 8 billion years of age, which is super old. But somehow they are stable. They are there. They are not being pulled apart. And this is because they are also very isolated. So there are no other galaxies around them to pull things apart. So they are just there. And that's probably one of the reasons why they can evolve. They just need to be in these environments where they are isolated and there's nothing to completely mess up everything.
In your Scientific American article, you come up with a term of art called a bullet dwarf scenario. Now, that is a really vivid name. Can you maybe walk us through what a bullet dwarf collision actually looks like, and what's crashing into it, and why does dark matter end up separated from the stars in this scenario?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is basically our prominent scenario to explain these galaxies. So what we think is that this is the miniature of the bullet cluster, and that's where the bullet comes from. The bullet cluster is the collision of two clusters of galaxies, very massive things, that collided so fast and in a specific geometry that this was able to separate the visible matter from the dark matter, because dark matter doesn't collide with anything. So it just passed through when you collide two things, while the gas and the stars, they do collide. So you are able to separate things. So you have a cluster of dark matter and a cluster of visible matter. This is what we see in the bullet cluster, and this is one of the images in the Scientific American article. But then this would be a miniature version of it, just two dwarf galaxies colliding very fast, and this collision would be able to again separate visible from dark matter, and this is, so you would have kind of a trail of galaxies that don't have any dark matter and two galaxies that collide at first that are completely dominated by dark matter. So you have just dark matter and then just stars in the middle.
This sounds like a lot of data to consume here. How did astronomers first figure out that objects might be related, and what does that trail look like? I mean, how did this actually get discovered?
Yeah, so at first, we discovered this galaxy, the Mouthful 1, NGC 1052 DF2, and we developed a whole theory just for it, just trying to explain this specific galaxy. So this would be a single galaxy where dark matter and visible matter are separated. But then Peter van Dokkum at Yale University started thinking that maybe if these things happen, they could extend to a lot of other galaxies. So let's just look at the surroundings of the galaxy to see if there are some others that look like it and may also not have dark matter. So we started looking at the whole group of galaxies to see if there were other similar ones. And what we found is that there was a trail. So a lot of galaxies aligned, that all of them around 7 to 11 don't have any dark matter when you measure their velocities. But then two galaxies at the tips of this trail that have a lot of dark matter, they are just dark matter.
Louisa, this is incredible work that you have been doing. What led you here?
So many things. So basically, as I tell in my article, I'm Brazilian. I did both my undergrads and my master's in Brazil. And this discovery came about in 2018 when I was studying my master's students studies. And the first conversation that we had in a class about galaxy formation and evolution was how dark matter was important and everything needed it, but somehow these galaxies showed up and they had no dark matter. And this has been my driving question ever since. And then I went to Australia to do my PhD exactly on that. And now I'm here at Yale with Peter, which is the person that found them out. So it's a full circle. But yeah, I think it's just fascinating.
It's really fascinating. Well, and especially to be working alongside, sort of a mentor to you. That's really incredible at Yale. And so it's controversial, this work, though, that you and Peter have come up with. What are the, what are the biggest controversies here? Or what are you hearing, especially as this article comes out in Scientific American?
I mean, I kind of understand it because you saying that the whole universe can be explained by something that you don't see, it raises a lot of questions. So people are naturally trying to come up with explanations. What is dark matter? How can it be 30% of everything that exists in the universe? So I've gotten a lot of emails trying to explain what is dark matter, and I truly hope people are correct because this is probably the biggest question that we have in astronomy today. What is dark matter? What is dark energy? But unfortunately, it's not something that we are able to test right now. There are so many experiments throughout the Earth trying to understand what is dark matter, and maybe someday we will be able to find out, but I don't think right now it's happening. But in terms of specifically these galaxies, the controversies involved in it, some people say that we are not measuring the distance to the galaxies correctly, and this changes the mass because the mass is directly correlated with the distance to the galaxies. So if the galaxies are closer, they actually have much faster velocities, and this means a higher mass. But because of that, we have launched so many proposals to different telescopes to try and probe these distances. And we are now 100% sure of their distances. They are very far, like trillions and trillions of miles away. And they need to not have dark matter. We are 100% sure of it. So now this is still some, there is still some controversy, I will say. But recently we found other galaxies that are not in this group that was highly controversial. And these galaxies, they are in a cluster, which is much more secure in terms of distances. So now we have two independent measurements of galaxies that don't have dark matter. And now we cannot explain it by distance anymore. We need to go into actually what is causing these galaxies to not have dark matter.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we are in conversation with Dr. Luisa Busso, whose recent Scientific American article explores the strange new world of bullet dwarfs and dark matter. Dr. Busso, when we are talking about telescopes, you're currently using, I guess the data that you're collecting has been from the Hubble Space Telescope, which is showing you the infrared imaging to test the bullet dwarf scenario. Before I ask you, what you were specifically looking for in those images, are you going to be able to employ data maybe from the James Webb Space Telescope in addition to the Hubble Telescope?
Yes, we actually just got some proposals accepted to observe with James Webb. So basically, in astronomy, for you to be able to observe something, you have to submit a proposal and then you go into competition with a lot of other astronomers. Everyone has great ideas, and a committee will decide who's going to get the time. So we recently got about 12 orbits with James Webb to observe exactly the NGC 1052 group, to pinpoint, to really pin down the velocities of each of the galaxies in the trail, because then we can say all of them don't have dark matter, and these two at the tips have only dark matter. So this is going to be phenomenal. We are so happy. James Webb is so competitive, so it's amazing.
Congratulations. One of the things I love about the scientific community is actually controversy. People putting ideas out there that are very different, or maybe not accepting the ideas that are put right in front of them. And I think we all benefit from these kind of controversy. The bullet dwarf scenario is compelling, and I think that it can be, I think, controversial. What are the strongest rival explanations, and what would it take to maybe rule some of those out?
Yeah, so basically these galaxies, they are very different and difficult to explain because they are not just dark matter deficient. They also have these globular clusters, which are clusters of stars, that are much more luminous than all other galaxies that we know. So they have this combination of having extremely luminous globular clusters while also not having any dark matter. So all of the theories that try to explain these galaxies need to explain both of these facts. And some theories are able to explain the dark matter deficiency. Some of them are able to explain the globular clusters being super luminous, but only the bullet dwarf now is able to explain both of them because it's basically you are colliding the two galaxies and they are colliding so fast and with such strength that you are able to both separate visible and dark matter and to create pressure enough to form these overluminous globular clusters. So right now, the bullet dwarf is one of the only explanations that is able to actually explain it.
So, Louisa, for people who may be listening to this now who aren't tuned into astronomy, who thinks, what does it matter to me? You know, what does it matter to our planet? How would you answer that?
I would say that astronomy is a very privileged field that we can communicate with society very strongly, more than other exact sciences, because everyone finds it fascinating, looks at the sky and thinks it's amazing, different than other physical sciences. And I think since the beginning of times, people look at the sky and think, where did we come from? Where are we going? What does this all mean? And I think we have evolved so much in understanding the Big Bang, theory of gravity, how the universe evolves. But one of the big questions is what is dark matter? What is surrounding us? So I think these kind of studies, they are just what we need to understand dark matter, to understand dark energy, to understand all of the matter that is in the universe. So in that sense, from a kind of philosophical point of view, I think it's just interesting to understand what we are made of. In terms of impacts to the Earth, I don't think there are any, to be honest. These galaxies are so far away. But understanding the nature of dark matter helps us understand how the universe evolved and how galaxies formed, and eventually how the Milky Way formed and how the sun and the planetary systems formed. So I think it all connects to our great cosmological paradigm. So I would say that in the grand scheme of things, it's all very important.
Yeah, that was a great explanation. And you know, since we are just fresh off having witnessed sending four astronauts into deep space, I wanted to ask a little bit, you know, we think as we see them floating around in their capsule about gravity. And if you look at the gravitational pull here on Earth, you know, how does that compare to some of these galaxies that you have studied?
Yeah, so these are very different, I would say. Like the gravitational force on Earth depends on the sun, which will depend on the cluster, the local group, which is where we are inserted, and that's going to depend on the Milky Way and so many things. But in general terms, I would say that those galaxies, they have higher gravity because we're talking about a whole galaxy. But when we look at smaller scales, like planetary scales, then it's probably going to have a much lower gravity, so a much lower mass influencing those kinds of things. Yeah. But it is amazing. And then the Artemis II mission was so beautiful. And I think it's just mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
Dr. Buzo, you close the article by saying these galaxies leave you with more questions than answers. And for people listening to this show, I want to understand maybe a little bit more about astronomy. What is it that's so exciting rather than frustrating in your field?
I think honestly, everything is exciting. I don't have any frustrations. I mean, of course, when you're looking at data for a really long time, astronomy is not as beautiful for astronomers as it is for everyone looking at the sky. We actually look at a computer, but at like spectra and data that is not as nice all of the time. But the feeling of finding out where we came from and how does this all matter to the society and to our future, it's all very exciting. And I think discovering these galaxies, which may change our way of understanding galaxy formation and evolution, it's just amazing to be able to contribute to maybe in the future changing somehow the cosmological paradigm. So yeah, I think it's all just excitement, honestly.
So thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been absolutely fascinating learning about dark matter, dark energy, and bullet dwarfs. What is the one thing you want us to take away from your article in Scientific American?
I think just keep in mind that the universe is ever changing. We are trying to understand things while they are happening. So there are a lot of uncertainties involved, but it is very rewarding to be able to contribute to these kinds of things, to be able to communicate with society and to be able to have the chance to write a Scientific American article. And so many people get interested in it. It really gives me hope that we're going in the right direction, that people are interested in science, that people are really looking forward to what we as scientists are doing. So we need to keep that communication going. We need to just invest more for more people to be able to come into sciences, for more people to be able to do astronomy and astrophysics.
Dr. Luisa Buzo, thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio. It has been a genuine pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad I participated.